Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Want to get the puck. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, everybody. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you as we are live from the Giants facility in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Giants getting ready for Sunday's game against the Dallas Cowboys. If you'd like to give us a call, it's 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Or you could always get us up at hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, and we'll try to see what we can do about getting to all those comments and questions as soon as we possibly can. Again, 201-939-4513. Roman, before we go through anything else, I want to go quickly through the injury report. Now, yesterday, while you guys were able to do the program, we were still finding out what was going on with the Giants as they went through their first practice of the week. Guys who did not participate yesterday, Jaquan Williams with a concussion, Justin Pugh with a quad, and Cullen Jenkins with a calf. Now, Jenkins did not play last week. Pugh lasted 8 snaps before he had to come out, and Jaquan Williams got dinged at some point during the course of the game.
Right.
And as I understand it, Coach Coughlin said yesterday he was moving around some but had not gone through all of the NFL testing protocols yet, and so he was not clear to work, and I don't know if he's going to be clear to work today.
Yeah, and I think last week in terms of linebacker play, projecting into this week, Jaquan Williams definitely, you know, athletically would be missed if he were not able to go, Paul. Another person, you know, the fact that Justin Pugh didn't practice yesterday or today, you really hope he can get some good work in tomorrow and just play on Sunday. Sometimes those contusions, if you will, or those blood bruises, those things can affect your range, and you really need 3-4 days of just resting. And the game's on Sunday night, obviously. You know, that adds to like another half a day of rest before you have to go out and play. I've had that injury. It's not fun. Trust me, it's not fun, Paul. But hopefully each day you could be 10, 20, 25% better. So hopefully tomorrow we'll have some good news as Justin Pugh is a guy that desperately wants to play, and an absence of him will be desperately missed in light of what happened last week when Charles Brown got in at right tackle.
Right. Now, Jeff Schwartz has been practicing for the better part of almost 2 weeks now, since he came back from the dislocated toe he suffered during the preseason. He told us yesterday that he's been working out at both guard and at tackle, actually both sides of the line, so clearly they're making use of his versatility. He did not know as of yesterday afternoon where they plan to use him in the game. I don't know when he needs to know. I actually said to him, Roman, at what point? You need to know sooner rather than later. And he said, look, I'm sure they'll let me know at the appropriate time. Given the way the line's playing and given his skill set and ability to you know, be flexible, where do you suppose he fits?
He's a guard. He's primarily a right guard, I believe. So maybe that would be John Jerry's position if he were to come back. I don't see him playing tackle. Maybe right tackle he can get by.
Which he has done in the pros.
Which he's done in the pros, but if you've got to throw the ball for a long period of time against these fast, undersized defensive linemen, the Cowboys, I mean, luckily you're at home. There's no crowd noise, things like that. But I think Schwartz is better playing guard. But if he has to play tackle, I mean, I think the coaching staff probably feels like he's a better option than having Charles Brown play right tackle. But I'm going to put the heat on James Brewer. I mean, why haven't we discussed James Brewer as an option? If Charles Brown played in front of Brewer last week, I mean, that's probably showing you where he is in his development this season, or is it still a health concern? I mean, Brewer hasn't played all year. He didn't play in the preseason. Maybe he missed played a game or two.
He did play some preseason.
Played
snaps,
some preseason.
Yes.
I mean, outside of Odell Beckham's hamstring, I don't know if there's a longer injury that we've had to deal with than James Brewer. So I'm going to put the heat on James Brewer as a guy that should be able to contribute at right tackle. At least I would hope so.
Well, he hasn't been on the injury report.
Yeah, he hasn't been on the injury report.
He's just been scratched.
Yeah, so that's something that would be alarming to me as an offensive lineman, saying, this guy made the roster. Why isn't he asserted himself into a right tackle position.
Okay, 201-939-4513. Eric from North Dakota, you're first on the program. Hello.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you guys all doing?
Hi.
Hi, Eric.
Love your show. Love your
Thank
show.
You.
I try to watch your show almost every day, but from my work, you know, I even try to, you know, because your time zone is totally different than my zone, so.
Probably is. What, 2 hours in North Dakota, or is that three now?
That's two.
Two hours.
Yeah, two. At Mountain Time.
Yeah. I have a question, actually a couple questions. The first question is, who do you guys think that the Giants will retain from next year's season?
Well, you have two questions. What's your second question?
Go ahead.
My second question is on the draft picks for next year's. Your opinion, what do you guys think the Giants should get?
You know,
who they should go?
Well, thanks for the call. Let me just say, I think what he meant in terms of retaining, I think he's talking about the roster. Yeah, we appreciate the call. Thank you so much, Eric. I think he's talking about the roster. And mind you, Roman, there are a lot of Giants on this team right now who are in the final years of their contracts,
right,
or guys who signed one-year deals, guys like Walter Thurman.
Right.
Only, no way, I think he may have gotten a multi. No, he signed a one.
No,
he signed
one-year deal. Yeah, one-year deal for a high number as well.
So there are, we talked about, I think 45% of the roster turned over from last year to this year. There are a lot of guys they got to make decisions on this year.
Yeah, they do. And in terms of, you know, 2015, and we still have six games to play, obviously, and you want everyone on the team, on the rosters now, to play their best, putting themselves and the team in the best position to win. But, you know, going into next year, I think that always comes down to the team. They do their evaluations. They say, who would they like to sign? You know, every player is evaluated at a certain offer number. Let's say if it's a free agent, if it's, I think JPP's up, and I think Prince is up also. So those are two big names in terms of free agents. Now, your Walter Thurmans and your one-year guys or some guys that are up, I think, I mean, even guys like Brewer and Adrian Robinson are free agents, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there are a bunch of guys.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
go
there's
up
a
and
lot
down
of
list,
guys. But
there's no point even going through them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of guys.
It's up to the organization, the Maris, Tish, the Jerry Reese.
Heck, you don't even know where they're going to pick, Roman.
Yeah,
to be honest,
I mean, you don't know where
and that's part
draft.
Of the problem. As of today, they'd be number seven.
Right.
For what it's worth. Because, look, the Giants have always been build multi-levels here. Go through the draft, go through free agency, try to retain every guy that you think is good. You know, there's a lot of moving parts here. And
right.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm going to say it flat out. For me to start thinking about 2015 today, I can't do it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's very early to talk about that. But, you know, Eric asked the question, so we're trying to answer to the best of our knowledge. But I think from a football player's mindset, from a coaching and player's mindset, you got to play the Cowboys. And that's the number one focus. You've got to try to win another game in this division. Last divisional game, obviously, was the Eagles. Wasn't a very good outing for the Giants. They're at home. They lost the Cowboys in their place. They're at home now. So there's a lot. I mean, this is a 15th rival between Tony Romo and Eli Manning, I think not including the playoffs.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things at stake in this game. You know, and I know a lot of things this week, and I'll just say this for the sake of the show itself. There's been a lot of talk this week about other factors in the organization, this and that, and a lot of talk radio. I mean, this is the Sunday night game this week.
Yes, it is.
So there's been a lot of attention to the team and Eli and the organization,
sure,
the potential for next year. But in the mindset, again, of a player and a coach in that locker room, your goal is to win. Coach Kaufman said yesterday in a press conference show that he's got to look in the eyes of those 53 active guys, those practice squad guys, and put them in the position to win. This team still has to go in attack mode. You saw an onside kick last week that was recovered. You saw a defense that was stingy in the red zone. You saw an offense score for the first time in the opening drive. So there's some things that are still improving on this football team. They just unfortunately haven't played a complete game. And I think they're at a position now where they have to play near perfect. No sacks, no hits on the quarterback. You have to rush for 100 yards. You got to get a better Rashad Jennings this week, a week removed from playing from his injury. You've got to get some pressures. You know, where's JPP been the last 4 or 5 weeks in terms of getting to Tony Romo?
Got to have your A game to
you've
be,
gotta
to
have
be
your
a team
game
that considers itself a playoff team like the Cowboys.
Right, right. And you measure yourself in this league against the better teams in the league. You know, the Denvers, the whomevers. I mean, those teams, the Seattles. You played Seattle last week. You played Arizona earlier in the season. They're at the top of the conference. Now you got to play the Cowboys, who are leading the division. You know, them and the Eagles. You'll see the Eagles again. So the Giants, and I said this yesterday, they can do one of two things. They can prove that they're better than their record with a better outing against the Cowboys, or some of the things that have plagued them during these last five losses will continue to play them if they don't show up on Sunday night. And that's the God's honest truth from perspective.
You know I'm old, right?
You're older than me.
I'm really old. I've been doing this a long time.
Right.
I don't mean to say that lightning will strike twice, but in 1994, when Dan Reeves was the head coach, the Giants were 3-7 and won their last six games in a row. I mean, everybody thought that they were sinking deep into the quicksand and that the team had absolutely no hope whatsoever. And somehow, some way, they reached into their magical bag of tricks and won their last six games of the regular season and finished 9-7. Which is exactly the scenario that this team is facing now. Right. I'm not telling you they're going to do that, folks. But what I'm saying is I've seen lightning strike once. And it'd be pretty funny because it happened to this team. I'm not talking about some other team. The Giants actually did that. They didn't make the playoffs. They lost on a tiebreaker. But stranger things have happened.
Well, I want up you on that, Paul. How about the next season, Jacksonville? Tom Coughlin, same coach.
Yeah.
3-7. They won their last six games, similar, 9-7. They went to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the circumstances are different. This team, a lot of things would have to happen for this team to win out and stink into a wild card because they've already lost to Arizona. They've lost to Seattle. So in a case where Seattle doesn't win their division, they have a tiebreaker over the Giants. If both teams are to go 9, I mean, all those scenarios are
out
there.
It's a mess, but I just present that to you because
I get it. And
a mathematician has to look at those things. And by the way, Dave Brown was the quarterback then, and I think you'd rather have Eli Manning than Dave Brown, right?
I'd rather have Eli Manning than Dave Brown. I blocked for Dave Brown. Sorry, Dave, if you're listening, but it is what it is.
Okay. Christian from North Carolina, you're next on the show. Hello. Hello, Christian. Are you there?
Hey, I just want to mention, you know, anytime Randall has a big game, he's running those in routes, and he looks really good doing that. And, you know, I really hope to see more of that this Sunday.
Okay. We'll pass along the thought. Reuben Randall, get him on some in cuts, Roman. Go ahead.
Another thing is I see Beckham Jr. running that comeback route like a 10-year veteran, and you know, that it looks like something they can lean on because they really can't sit on it because of his speed. And, you know, I just hope to see a lot of comeback routes and a lot of in routes from those two guys.
All right, Christian, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let me touch on something about Beckham, and I want you to respond on this because it was after the Seattle game that Richard Sherman actually went up to Beckham after the game, told him what a great player and prospect he thought he was, and gave him his jersey. As a sign of respect, Beckham caught four passes against Sherman that day in man-to-man coverage.
Right.
So in a very short time, Roman, and let's, again, remind people, Beckham missed all of that time in the summer. The training camp, the first part of the season, he has come in here in an extremely short time. We're talking about the blink of an eye, and he's already started to make an impact.
And that's what he was brought here to do, Paul. And let's not, you know, a first-round pick, you know, a high first-round pick, I think, was he 12th?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, 12th pick. He's expected to do that. And it's good to get props from some of the guys like Richard Sherman, some of the better cornerbacks in the league. And you talk about those comeback routes. You know, one thing, we spoke to Odell Beckham a few weeks ago on the First and Ten show. You know, I asked him, I said, look, you were considered an NFL-ready guy coming out of college because of the things that he was asked to do in college from an offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, who spent a long time in San Diego with me, so a long time in Baltimore, obviously. So having him do NFL-type routes, NFL-type throws that he was getting, that comeback route, man-to-man, is very hard to defend. You've got to have a quarterback that can put it in the right place so you can run and lean and get that defensive back on their heels and then turn around and catch the ball. I mean, that's almost a foolproof route and catch if you can make that connection. So Odell Beckham, in terms of his promise, he's shown a lot. And in terms of upside, I mean, the sky's the limit.
We can't fail
to mention the return of number 80 on the other side of the field with number 13 on one side. And whoever the slot, doesn't matter. I mean, that would be a good mix for 2015. I know we're not talking about 2015, but I'm looking forward to the tandem of the future of the Giants.
Yeah, the very, very explosive, exciting player. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. So hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter Code Blue to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. 201-939-4513 is our phone number here at Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you. Very glad you could join us today for the program. I want to quickly see if we can hit one or two of these Twitter questions before we get back to the calls. I know sometimes the folks like to hit us up on the computer instead of dialing in. They're a little shy at times, you know what I mean, Roman? Sometimes people don't want to dial that phone. So let's see here. We have a Giant. You know what? I misspelled Giants chat. Giants chat with a hashtag.
With an S.
Just so you know, with all an right. S. All right, we'll get it right this time. Andrew says, Roman, can one offensive lineman change the game that much for the Giants?
Well, being a former tackle, if you're a tackle that's getting beaten, it'll show. But if you're a tackle that's sealing your man or blocking your man at the point of attack, you know, that'll show as well in the running game. What you want, ideally, is an offensive line that you're not hearing from, but you're seeing the productivity when the running back's running through the line, when the quarterback's setting his feet in the pocket. That's what one guy makes a difference. And you saw the one guy made a difference when Pugh got hurt and Charles Brown had to come in at right tackle. I mean, you saw there was, I thought, three specific plays that Eli Manning was either hit or forced to throw the ball away or sacked.
All right. A.J. Marshall says, did Jaquan Williams take his concussion test yet? And do the Giants need his athletic ability out there to cover the Cowboys' tight ends? I don't know exactly where Jaquan Williams stands this morning. It sounded like, based on what Coach Coughlin said yesterday, he was still a little bit of time away from getting cleared with those tests. So I don't know how good it looks for this weekend. One of the options the Giants certainly would have would be to perhaps put a safety on Witten,
right,
who has been, let's face it, paving a way to the Hall of Fame for a few years now.
Yeah, I mean, Witten is a monster in terms of his. I mean, he and I think Antonio Gates are two better tight ends in the league for the last decade.
Well, they're both going to Canton.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But again, you know that Perry Fuel is drawing up something in his sandbox in terms of what the Giants are going to do defensively against this Cowboys attack. And we have to we remiss we didn't say that. They haven't run DeMarco Murray as much as they did in the first half of the season before the bye week or before that Jacksonville game. So you're seeing those carries come down a little bit. I think you and I talked about that yesterday in the press conference.
Yeah, the numbers, Roman, the last 3 weeks, he's only averaging 24 touches a game.
Right.
Prior to that, he was averaging 30 touches a game. Now, Jason Garrett down in Dallas had told folks after the first month or so of the season, look, they were on pace to get him record-breaking touches, and he's never been durable in his career before. So they knew that if they kept going to that that well too often, at some point it was going to dry up and he was going to get hurt or just worn out. And so they were trying to figure out ways to cut back his workload. Apparently they've started to do it. Now remember, last week they had the bye after the game in England against Jacksonville, so he definitely should be well rested.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, it's to some degree the law of diminishing returns when you continue to, you know, feed a back in this modern age where everyone's as fast as a running back now. I mean, you got D linemen, linebackers. You know, it used to be the running back and receivers were that much better athletically than everybody else, and now everything's caught up, and that's why you can't have these bell cow running backs anymore like you had, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Again, we will see if – now, one thing I need to mention, when you look at this coaching staff, you know, Scott Linehan, who's a passing game coordinator, he was a Detroit, he was the head coach at the Rams for a few years.
Right.
I remember him in college. He was at Louisville where I was at school. I mean, he likes to air it out. You got Bill Callahan, the O-line coach, assistant offensive coordinator, is a West Coast guy. Loves that rhythmic passing attack, similar to what the Giants are doing this year with the Green Bay Packers. So if you've got a spread-out guy, a West Coast guy, now they're running the ball. Paul, let's not think for a minute that they won't go back to Terrence Williams, Dez Bryant, Jason Witten, March, and try to open up that offense again and then run the ball selectively with DeMarco Murray, trying to get him some high percentage passes. I mean, sorry, high percentage runs. So well, you might see a situation where they might throw the ball and set up the runs.
Remember against the Giants earlier this year when they beat the Giants 31-21, Dez Bryant had over 150 yards receiving, and it was Escobar who caught the two touchdown passes.
Right.
So they're not afraid to get it to those other guys,
right,
even though Murray's got over 1,200 yards on the ground, and he's the only 1,000-yard back so far
right.
in the NFL this season. By the way, Randall, with only 29 carries, is the second leading rusher on the Cowboys. 29 carries, Roman. That's 10 games.
Yeah.
29 carries. I mean, wow. He doesn't exactly have to eat his Wheaties for breakfast, does he?
No. But again, I mean, they had a formula that's worked for them, and I think, you know, you come out of training camp with trying to do multiple things that can work, and whatever's working those first two or three weeks, you just ride it out, and then you keep reevaluating. But I think now you're going to see a Dallas Cowboys team again that's going to use their whole offense and then run the ball selectively.
Okay, 201-939-4513. Elijah from Indianapolis, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good to How talk you to you.
Hey, I was going to talk about the defense right now. I think it'd probably be better off if we had, you know, I think Casey, when he came in, I think he did pretty good. And how would you guys like to see, well, how would this be if it was no patient gear, you know, McClain, who I think needs to step up the most with his tackling, and Kennard. And how'd you guys think those through look out?
Well, I will just say this to you. Thanks for the call, Roman. If you looked at the stats off of last week's game, and they don't always tell the whole story, Herzlick had 9 tackles. I think Kennard had 8 or 9 tackles.
Right.
And I think McClain had like 13,
right,
double digits. So the linebackers were very active.
Yeah, they were. And you look at and it goes back to, you know, the 49ers attack. I mean, they ran the ball a lot in the middle. When they threw the ball a lot, I mean, it made the linebackers very active in terms of
– It had to be.
Yeah, in terms of by design, but they had a lot of tackles and they responded. So we have overall on this Giants roster a group of linebackers that are good tackles. Even Devin Kennard, as a rookie, has come in as being a really
they like him a lot.
Yeah, being a very physical guy. I mean, he's not as athletic as Jaquan Williams to a certain degree, but he's more physical than he was coming in. Where Jaquan Williams more an athletic guy, but this guy Kennard, I remember in training camp, Coach Coughlin saying, "Look, you got to tell this guy to take a little bit of the mustard off of some of the tackling." So I think Devin Kennard could be one of the next great Giants linebackers.
I think if you remember in Dallas, Beeson had gone out with
right.
the recurrence of his foot injury, and Kennard actually had to come in and play. And if I'm not mistaken, that might have been his first action at linebacker in the regular season. Up
right.
to then, he was only on specials, remember? And so in that last month or so, we've seen him gain more and more experience, and even now, only a short time later, he seems to be much more comfortable. He seems to be getting it a little bit, although I will tell you, coming out of USC, this is not a guy who was afraid of the headlights. I mean, he played at a big-time program in front of a lot of attention in Los Angeles. I didn't sense at all that he was intimidated by this spot, Roman, and that's a lot of times that's part of the battle, because a rookie coming in can be a little I don't want to say timid, but
a little apprehensive. Because
yeah.
You start to look at the totality of everything, not just what you have to do. And then, I mean, look, my rookie year, me and Amani Toomer were roommates.
Michigan and Louisville.
Yeah.
And, what a mix.
He, you know, I dressed 6 games. I played 2 of them, and I mean, field goal in 1 other game. And,
sure.
And, the Eagles game. But again, that next year is when you really everything settled down. Now you can focus on your job. So, but for a rookie to come in who's used to that spotlight, you know, guys, especially some of these guys like Odell Beckham, said he played in the SEC. So it was like they always have this comparison. It's like Alabama, LSU every week, though, not just 1 week
right.
of the season. But you always appreciate a rookie that could come in and is very mature in terms of his mental approach and not getting, you know, distracted by the, you know, the New York buzz, so to speak.
Yeah, he seems to really have his head on straight. So looking forward to watching more of Kennard as the season goes on. Jack from Florida, you're next on the program. Hello.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hi, Excellent. Jack.
How you doing?
Hi. This is my first time calling. I just got a question about Victor Cruz. It's
sure.
It's kind of like an opinion thing. So I know a lot of people are saying that, you know, this knee injury, he might not have the same speed and explosiveness he once had. So for next year when he comes back, worst case scenario, is he just one of the best possession receivers in the game?
Well, let me just say this. Let me just say this. Neither one of us are doctors. And I will tell you, in speaking with Victor Cruz himself, he's been assured by the medical staff that he's going to be able to rehab and get back to as good as new. So I have not heard from either his doctors, which it's none of my business to talk to his doctors, or, you know, or from Victor that, you know, he won't be 100% or that he won't be able to rehab completely. Now, you can go by other people's cases, but as you all know, you know, every medical situation is different. Look, here's the bottom line. I think I can say this about Victor Cruz. He's going to do everything in the world he can do to get back and to get back as close to 100% if possible. And if he doesn't make 100%, I'm sure it's going to be really close enough where he can be a very effective player. So if you're asking me, can he still be a possession receiver? I mean, I know he is extremely confident that he's going to be a good NFL player again when he makes it back, regardless of what the numbers are.
And let's understand that.
Thank you for the call, by the way.
Thank you. For any player that gets injured, there's always a period of an adjustment the year you come back. So next year, for 2015 year, Victor Cruz is going to be a period of his body adjusting to recovering from that injury. You know, you're going to rehab the crap out of it and get the quad strong, get all the muscles around there strong, the joints and tendons. And then you kind of fight through that year. You kind of limit some of the things, and sometimes it inflammates, gets sore. You have to, and then
he's got a lot of work ahead of him.
Oh yeah, and
he
then
does.
After you get through that year from 2016 on, that's when it settles down. I mean, I remember Ike Hilliard. We had the neck injury. As a rookie came back.
Look at the career he had.
Yeah, I mean,
really good player.
Monty Toomer. We're talking about receivers now. Had a partial ACL.
Twice.
You know, came back. So, I mean, you're capable of coming back. It's just that
Dominic Hixon,
yeah, your body does have to adjust.
Yeah, so in any event, again, talked to Victor, I guess it was about a week or so ago, and he says all systems are go, everything looks good to this point, and only time will tell. Unfortunately, you know, you can't look into the future with injuries. Injuries have to heal on themselves or by themselves with a tremendous amount of hard work and rehabilitation. 201-939-4513 is our phone number, or hashtag Giants Chat. We'll take another look here at the internet and see if anybody... Oh, yeah, I misspelled it again. Why am I stuck with these typos tonight, Roman? Giants Chat. There we go. We'll hit it up one more time. Let's see here. What do we have here? Oh, Andrew, I guess we heard a comment from him before. I'll take a look at this one. I'm sorry. He was asking about Sean Andrews maybe coming out of retirement to play. Sean Andrews had a back problem.
Yeah.
And then also had a blood disorder at some point when he got to the Giants.
Right.
He was a big body. He was a good guy. He was a good player. But that time has passed. In fact, I think he's out of the league 2 years now, Ron?
Yeah, he is.
He was quite a force. I know the Giants were glad to have him. You know, one guy who was here for a year and actually played pretty well until he broke his leg was Sean Locklear.
Yeah, I like Locklear. He was doing a great job at right tackle. I mean, and I think he would have been a short-term solution in terms of the transition from McKenzie at right.
He's not playing, though, this year, by the way, so I don't know if he's, like, officially retired or he just decided to let it fade away. But
sometimes you don't.
He was pretty good.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't officially submit paperwork anymore to retire. If you've been out of the league for a full season, the league already retires you, and you start getting your severance check and your paperwork and all that. So, I mean, some popular players will say, oh, I've officially announced my retirement, but that's for, you know, media purposes, and then it gives you a chance to do other opportunities, whether media, career, whatever. But if you played, for example, if you haven't played since end of 2013 and you don't play in 2014, by the first day of the league year in 2015, you would be considered retired in terms of the starting process of your retirement, paperwork, and all that stuff.
Once that happens, are you also an unrestricted free agent that you can sign with anybody, or do your rights revert back to the team that you would still been under contract with?
If you got released in your last year...
If you were not released,
if you've been out of the league for a year, then your contract's been voided. You can sign with anybody you want anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
All right. Sometimes I get lost in the paperwork. Sometimes CBA rules change. You're up on this stuff, Roman.
I try.
Well, you visit the league office quite often. 201-939-4513. Paul Dottino, Roman Oben, as the Giants get ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys Sunday at MetLife Stadium. By the way, I do want to remind people that the Giants' 19th annual coat drive is Sunday night before the primetime game. Now, for you folks who have been Giants season ticket holders for a long time, or for folks who have had the opportunity to come to Giants games, you know that in the winter, there are a lot of people who are unfortunate, who don't have as many things and, you know, gifts and benefits and the luxuries that we all have, and they desperately need coats for the winter. It gets real cold in these parts. In fact, it has been the last couple of days. Right. We haven't had Buffalo snow, but it's been cold. Right. Anyway, what the Giants try to do, and again, 19 years I believe this thing is going down, in conjunction with New York Cares and FedEx, they will collect gently worn coats that, you know, you guys don't have a need for. You know, maybe it's been in the closet for 5 or 6 years. You don't wear it anymore. You got a new one. And what are you going to do with the old one? Well, you know what? There are people who could probably use them.
Right.
So what the Giants do is they set up some displays and some collection bins outside the gates once a year for what they call the coat drive. And this Sunday night is the coat drive before the Dallas Cowboys game. So if you have any gently worn coats, or new coats for that matter, maybe you bought it and decided, gee, I don't like it anymore, even though I didn't wear it.
Right.
Bring it down here and throw it in the bins. Give it to the collection folks, and you'll do a good deed and help somebody who certainly needs something warm for the winter. Roman, I can't tell you how I've always tried, you know, whether it's the Toys for Tots or the coat drive. Last weekend it was the food drive. The Giants always do these things, and I always try to do something because it's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I remember as a player in the early years of the coat drive, I mean, I was 96 draft pick. I remember giving away some old coats and just submitting, hey, whoever wears a size 4X, maybe could.
Now, that's
could use
the problem.
Some
finding
of the
somebody who could have fit Roman's coat. In any case, 201-939-4513. So, wanted to just remind you folks about the coat drive coming up on Sunday. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite 1 week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter Code Blue to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you. I wanted to go back, Roman, for just a second, if you don't mind. I want to look at the Cowboys stats because I was looking at a couple of very interesting things earlier in the week as we were preparing for our MSG shows. And the turnover ratio, very interesting because, as you know, Tom Coughlin preaches,
right,
preaches ball security and tells you about, I believe the number is something like 85% winning percentage when you win the turnover,
right,
battle. Interesting. The Dallas Cowboys are 7-3. They're -1 in turnover ratio.
That's weird.
Which is a little surprising, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think it would be higher?
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's not. Interesting thing for them. They are tied for second in the league with 10 fumbles lost.
Offensively, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is impressive.
And I mean, that's a pretty big number. It doesn't jive with what usually happens in this league. They've been able to get away with a lot of stuff.
And I'll be honest with you, that's something that kills a team in January, those turnovers. And I think because the defense hasn't been able to create a lot of turnovers, a lot of interceptions, things like that, that's what sways that number down. That -1. I mean, most teams that in this league that are, you know, have won 7-8 games out of 10-11 games. I mean,
they're in the plus category.
Yeah, they're in the +8, +9.
Yeah.
+10 some teams. So it's really
very surprising.
I think offense is always going to have its share of turnovers, unfortunately, fumbles. But if defense cannot create the turnovers, that's always going to bring that number down.
And the number here that's real interesting on the sheet, that guy DeMarco Murray leads the team with 5 fumbles.
Wow.
Okay, now, it's true he's carried it 244 times, and he's also caught 36 passes. But as I've been trying to tell people all along, and Roman, I want you to address this because, heck, you played a long time. When a player is as much of a workhorse as DeMarco Murray is, and again, he's had durability issues in his career, the things you've got to worry about as you get to this point of the season are not just injuries with him, but it's also fatigue. It's mental and it's physical fatigue. And all of a sudden, things like mistakes and fumbles start, you know, drop passes. This stuff starts to creep into your game when you're not sharp.
Yeah, Paul, especially when you haven't been used to consistently carrying the ball like that over a long period of time. You know, he's not a, you know, Curtis Martin, you know, 11 years straight of 1,000-yard seasons. You know, learning how to deal with your body, the fatigue of a season, you know, later in the season, still having that ball security. When you do get tired, when you talk about the mental aspect of it, you lose focus and concentration. And sometimes that allows you to carry a ball outside, bread loaf a little bit. Just some of the little nuances you don't pay as much attention to because you're physically taking that much of a toll, then the mental fatigue is the next kind of phase two, if you will, that settles in. But the backs that are used to carrying the ball that much usually don't fumble a lot. I mean, I blocked for LaDainian Thompson in San Diego, one of the better backs in the league.
And he was a bell cow.
Yeah, and he wasn't a big guy, but he knew he played big, and he rarely ever fumbled.
Now let me give you just as by comparison, Roman, just so we understand. Last year, DeMarco Murray had only 217 carries for the season.
Wow.
Okay? And that was his career high. He's already got 244 now. He is already in uncharted waters. He is in dangerous territory, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of how he's going to hold up. And that's why, you know, I've been telling people I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys go into a swoon and certainly don't do very well in the postseason, because they've been riding this horse for everything that he's worth, and they know that. And that's why they're cutting back his touches a little bit. But if you're a defense, don't you want to make sure you hit him and hit him hard to make sure at this point in time that he's going to be apt to be making those fatigue mistakes?
Oh, yeah. And then you talk about his carries. I mean, he's setting his own precedence. He's at a place in his career that he's never been before. So we will see, and I'm sure the Giants defense, the linebackers specifically, are saying, you know, they're going to look at all those fumbles, saying, where can we hit this guy? Where can we, the ball side, can he get stripped? Where does he lose his lapse of concentration? All those things are going to happen from the defense.
All right. 201-939-4513. All good stuff to talk about as the Giants take on the Dallas Cowboys. It was presented to me yesterday that the Giants secondary, which we've been talking about now for quite a long time, has three of its top four corners out on injured reserve. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, who has been fighting lower body injuries throughout the course of the season. In fact, he was even hurting when they played the Cowboys the last time.
Right.
It seems like he might be the most intelligent matchup against Dez Bryant. The problem is Dallas moves Dez around everywhere. He's left, he's right, he's slot. Yeah. Strategically, Roman, what would you think the Giants need to do to try to contain this guy who, again, caught for over 150 yards of passing against them when they played in October?
Well, I think in the traditional sense, he will draw an attraction from a safety over the top, whether that's Anchal Roll or Stevie Brown, Demps, whomever. You know, those traditional things are going to happen. Secondly, you've got to disrupt his routes on the line. And I know Dominic Rogers-Cromartie is a taller guy. He's a physical corner. He welcomes those physical challenges, and he's not going to get bullied or intimidated by a Dez Bryant. And a caller called earlier about those comebacks. You know, he doesn't catch a lot of those, but that's something that if he's getting beat up a little bit physically, he's going to have to run some routes that involve some of those comeback routes or some square ends. But it starts with a receiver like that. You've got to disrupt his route. I know the rules are different with the pass interference rules. They're calling it a lot now. But within those first two or three steps, you've got to put your hands on him, jam him, make him disrupt that rhythm and timing. Because as soon as Tony Romo comes out of his break and plants his feet, there's a correlation in football, guys, between the quarterback's drop and a route depth. So, for example, if it's a five-step drop, that's usually about, you know, 2.5 seconds. The quarterback, if the receiver's running an in route or whatever route, there's a specific length of time it takes to run that. So all that timing has to be, and that's what you practice. That's why you do Skelly and 7-on-7 and all that stuff. But, again, if you have a cornerback who's physical and can disrupt that timing, in addition to hopefully a defensive lineman, this week would be a great week that can get in the quarterback's face.
Yes,
all those things do a lot to disrupt that timing of the route and affect that quarterback and receiver relationship. So those are the things that you're going to have to do to stop a guy like Dez Bryant. And let's not forget, he's on the outside. You've got that real estate between the hashes and the numbers that belongs to Jason Witten as well.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. He certainly does own that territory. Tom Rock of Newsday tweeting out from practice during the media portion, Justin Pugh not practicing today. So that's consistent with what we saw yesterday. He says here, doesn't look like Schwartz was doing all that much during drills either, although he was with the team. Tom Rock also says Jaquan Williams was running on the side, but not practicing.
Yeah.
So, Roman, I think that puts him even further in doubt for playing against Dallas. Cullen Jenkins was practicing, makes the comment about the calf strain. Jenkins has been improving, as he has told us over the course of the last week. So that's good news. Cullen Jenkins, by the way.
Tough guy. Tough as nails.
Right? I mean, I have to tell you, until the Giants signed him, and I know he had played with Green Bay and Philadelphia earlier in his career, until the Giants signed him, I didn't really appreciate how good a player he was or how much of a good character guy he was until he got here. He's good stuff.
Yeah, he is. And a lot of the things that happen on the inside, the interior line, that a lot of fans don't see or don't know about is that blue-collar sort of work. You're always fighting a double team. You're always going against a center and a guard. You're always splitting a double team. Sometimes you get cut. Sometimes you get rolled up on from the back. You know, he had I think he's had a calf issue.
Right.
The last few weeks. So not all the time. You're getting held all the time, and I'm an offensive lineman. I know about holding. But it's not holding unless you call it. So let's just clarify that.
Exactly.
But again, Colin Jenkins, I was good friends with his brother, Chris Jenkins, who played against him at Carolina, you know, at the Jets.
Sure.
I was very good friends with Chris Jenkins, and I always would tell him that. I say, look, your little brother plays with a great deal of leverage and size. I mean, he's only 6'2", 6'3". Only about 305 pounds. His brother, Chris Jenkins, was like 340.
Yeah, he was a space eater.
He just sits on the line. But Cullen Jenkins does a great job using his leverage, especially with his inside hand, and how to split that blocking scheme and disrupt the blocking scheme of the offensive lineman. In a game like this, it would be a bonus if Cullen Jenkins, Hankins, Brom, whoever's in there, can get some pressure.
Kuhn.
Can get some pressure on Tony Romo from the interior. Because if you set back and set the throw and you've got a D lineman coming in your face and hopefully the pocket is collapsing on the outside, you can't do that roll out and toss it again because you should have a defensive end right behind you. So that interior pass rush is paramount, Paul, for this week. Getting in Romo's face, disrupting his timing, his feet, his rhythm, not letting him get his feet set and square his shoulders to throw, find the open receiver.
I think Romo is probably one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen at spinning out of pressure in the backfield.
Right.
You know, a lot of guys can sidestep or step up into the pocket or even roll out to the sidelines. But Romo's the kind of guy who, you know, he'll take a couple of steps and all of a sudden he'll spin, turn around and go in the other direction and find even more time to extend the play. And you know what? More often than not, he burns you out of that formation.
Yeah, he does. And earlier in the season, we talked about this, Paul, that he was throwing a lot of deep middle passes when he does that rollout
right.
When he does to his left. He was doing a lot of passing in the deep middle of the field, and they actually scored on one of those against the Giants the last time that they played. So when Romo's out of the pocket, he's a lot more dangerous, I think, than when he's in the pocket.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any question about it, at least over the years against the Giants. He's certainly made a lot of plays out of broken plays, as they call them, although with him it's never a broken play, is it?
No, not at all.
201-939-4513. Paul Dottino, Roman Oben with you. It's 12:43 in New York City, which means we have approximately 20 minutes to go to the program. Looks like we have a Lorenzo from Virginia. Hello, Lorenzo. You're next on the program.
How's it going, guys?
Good to talk to you.
Good. Hey, look, Marshawn Lynch is getting a lot of buzz in terms of him not being with Seattle on next season. Just curious to know what you guys' thoughts are in terms of if he's someone that the Giants would consider bringing in as a free agent.
Marshawn Lynch.
Well, let's attack this from two perspectives.
Right.
You talk about him as a player. I'll talk about his contract situation.
Yeah, as a player, you know, he's got that low center of gravity, so he's got kind of a longer torso and shorter legs. So as he runs forward behind his pads, he's always going forward, and he creates, the worst highlight reels I've seen for a defensive standpoint when he runs over players and all that. I mean, he's a great back. I mean, there is some question about his future in terms of what he can still do over the next 2 or 3 years. But, again, he's how old is he?
He is 28.
Yeah, he's 28, yeah. So he's still a young guy. But,
yeah, he's pretty young.
But I think the Giants, in terms of their depth at the running back position, you know, Jennings, I think he signed a 4-year deal. He's going to be here. Andre Williams is going to continue to improve. Michael Cox, obviously, is injured, but he's the one of the younger guys. So I don't know where bringing in a 28-year-old veteran back like Marshawn Lynch makes sense on this roster for next year. But I'm not the general manager by any means. But I'm just saying, in terms of what the appearance from the outside, I don't know if that makes sense.
Thank you for your call. From an economics perspective, Roman, just so you know, Marshawn Lynch has 1 more year left on his contract with Seattle. $5 million is his base. Then there is, according to RotoWorld, it says here there's a $2 million in per game roster bonuses that are, I guess that's cumulative, that leads up to about $2 million. So I guess he could make about $17 mil next year. Then it says there's also a bonus based on if he gets a 1,500-yard season, another $1 million in incentives. So there's quite a bit of money we're talking about here from Marshawn Lynch, and I suppose that's one of the reasons why some people in Seattle are thinking he might get set free. I would also add one other thing to you, though, that any time that a general manager decides he's going to sign a player, he's looking at the whole package. And if you recall reading in the papers this week, Marshawn Lynch just got fined again by the NFL.
Yeah, for not speaking,
to the media.
Yeah, I think $100,000 he's up to now.
You know, I'll be honest with you. That's part of the equation.
Right.
I mean, last time I checked, you know, these guys don't just look at the stats on a player, but they also look into their personality and background checks. And Marshawn Lynch clearly has some personality issues. We know for years he has not liked to talk to the media. Super Bowl week, there was a big to-do made about that.
Right.
So, you know, heck, you played here, Roman. You played in other places, too, but you played here in New York.
You can't play in New York and not talk to the
media. It's an issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an issue. And I think from an organizational standpoint, it's the risk-reward factor. Is the risk of the things associated with player A or player X worth the reward of signing him of what he can do on Sundays in a game? And I think there's some organizations that are more conservative than others. There's some that are more gutsy than others in terms of signing. I mean, we saw for years with Redskins signing these big free agents every year that
right.
never really panned out. But I think it always goes back to the risk-reward factor of that particular player.
Yeah, no question. It's part of the portfolio, as they say. 201-939-4513. Ernest from Connecticut, you are next on the show. Hello.
Hello, everyone. How are you guys doing?
Hi, we're well. How are you?
Okay. Well, I have two phrase questions I want to ask you a question about. Okay, the first one is, do you think that Pierre Paul will get a new contract? And if he does, do you think he's going to get a lucrative one? And
go ahead. You had two. Go ahead.
And the second one is that Ben McAdoo, even though I know that he's a rookie, you know, play caller, but I'm wondering, do you think they will keep him next year? I'd like just to hear your answer. Just what you're thinking on that, if possible.
Okay. I think any decisions about the coaching staff, the Giants have always said that they will always evaluate at the end of the season.
Right.
Wellington Mara himself always said that you never make those kinds of decisions while games are still being played because emotions play into it, and you never want to make a decision when your emotions are involved.
Right.
So I think that's honestly the best answer to give you there. The time frame is not right to do that. As far as JPP, Roman, we've talked about him throughout. He's played the run much better. The numbers indicate that the pass rush hasn't been what the Giants had hoped. Tom Coughlin said a couple of weeks ago, I'd take 12 sacks out of him. I don't think he's going to get to 12.
Right.
And all those things are going to have to be considered when you talk about what his value is, because ultimately it's not about whether or not you want to keep a player. It's whether you want to keep him at a certain price.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
That's why I said every organization.
Thanks for the call, by the way.
And that's why I said every organization values a player at that financial number based on what they think. And if somebody out there can go out there and give him a better deal or whoever, then God bless him. I mean, and the Giants dealt with this, you know, almost this time last year with Justin Tuck. Where he was valued or the number that they believed he could play at was at a certain number. And then what he wanted and what his agent wanted, for example, was at a different way. And they couldn't find a way to meet in between. But it doesn't. I mean, and Tuck was older, obviously. Tuck was much older than JPP.
That's true.
JPP's his fourth year. But
five.
Fifth year. Oh, that's right, fifth year. So you hope you can keep him and add to next year's roster. But at the end of the day, the team, and I learned this, my free agent year. I think my agent and George Young, I believe, got into a little bit of a – no, Ernie Accorsi, I think, got into a little bit of a blank match. I don't want to say the
– Oh.
Yeah. My agent and Ernie Accorsi got into a little disagreement about where they thought I was versus where I did. And I had to play with an injury that season. It was a 99 season. I played with a torn meniscus the whole year. Didn't have the greatest years compared to the other two.
Yeah, but you came on strong at the end of that year.
Yeah, came on strong. Blocked Bruce Smith, shut down Chad Bradsky when he came here to play the Colts. But again,
I used to talk to him during the week, believe it or not.
I remember, Paul, you coming up to me and saying, hey, Roman, the first half has been great, but the last four games you've done really well, and I hope wish you luck in the next four games.
I saw it.
Yeah, so I remember that, Paul. And I think sometimes you have to be removed from the game to realize that it is a business.
Yeah.
And there's not a moment that goes by. I tell my wife this all the time, that I would have given anything to trade places with Howard Cross and Amani Toomer, guys that were my contemporaries that played their entire season, their entire careers in this organization. And I know the business of football, you know, you become a free agent, another team. I mean, Cleveland, you know, I went to Cleveland Browns and Lomas Brown came here. We almost swatched places. Ended up playing together in Tampa.
That's true.
And he was my backup in Tampa.
And got rings.
Yeah, got rings. But obviously winning a Super Bowl with John Gruden's team was a great year. But, again, the value as a player of being where you started your career, it's always going to be home. But when you leave and go to another team, it's a business.
Yeah.
You don't get the benefit of the doubt when you go on another team. So some of these players that say, hey, there's 31 other teams out there, and if this team doesn't pay me, someone else will. Well, when you get on the other side, it's a different animal. Because coaches get fired, GMs get fired. You know, there's not the consistency that you see. And this is, you know, unscripted, obviously, Paul. The Giants are one of the more marquee franchises in all sports.
Sure.
And football, definitely. Giants, Steelers, Green Bay. I mean, those are the franchises that are always going to be competitive, always going to win. And in terms of how the organization is run, that's something that I appreciated as a player. I mean, Ronnie Barnes, I always would brag about him being the best from – Pat Hanlon, I mean, the people in this organization, this building, just how things are done. So I just want to conclude that. But when you're a free agent, you can't emotionally – the best thing you can do is play and have a great year and make it hard on the team to get rid of you. It's just like making the team in training camp. Tom Coughlin always says this during production meetings in preseason. There's some guys that I circle. These guys better make it hard for us to cut them or keep them.
That's true.
And so the best thing you can do – before your agent decides your fate, the best thing you can do is go out there every Sunday and make plays, and then that'll help you in your career and ultimately your family.
The only wild card to all of these things, or the elements that you just talked about, Roman, is that much like, remember when Albert Haynesworth was blown away by the Redskins offer, you know, sometimes even though you may think the club is in the ballpark with your value, and maybe even though you want to stay with that team, somebody out of the blue, remember, there are, you know, 32 teams in the NFL.
I mean, look at Lanville Joseph last year.
Somebody has a lot of room under the cap, and they say, guess what? We got a whole truckload of money we're going to give you. And they just blow you out of the water with an offer that you simply can't turn down because, as you said, Roman, there's a business side to this.
Right.
And if somebody's just going to give you the keys to Fort Knox, sometimes a player just has to go because, let's face it, he just can't turn down the kind of money that's offered.
Yeah, and you can't turn down the money, obviously, but in Albert Haynesworth's case, I mean, his nickname became Albert Haynesworthless.
I'm from
D.C., so I hear all the jokes.
But the point being, they gave him a Brinks truck.
No, they did. They did, and it didn't pan out. And sometimes you've got to make sure you do the best you can to plead your case on staying where you are, because this is where you got drafted, this is where you grew, this is where you became a man, if you will, in terms of your career, and in terms of being a part of this New York community as a Giant. I don't think there's anything better.
Roman, we have another phone call.
Sure.
Lodi from New York, you're next on the show. Hello.
No, it's Roby.
Roby, as in Reggie Roby? Okay, man, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Roman?
Excellent.
I mean, and I know a lot of, you know, there's a lot of changes that have to happen, you know, this upcoming off season and everything like that. The one change, you know, I know fans are saying, you know, they want to see, you know, a change from the head coach. I'm one of the guys that really doesn't want to see a change, you know, within the head coach. I just want to see, you know, give at least, you know, Tom Coughlin one more year just to see if he can, you know, have a healthy, you know, personnel on the field and see what he can do. I think, you know, I think he kind of deserves at least one more year. And another thing, too, is if, you know, we just changed this offensive coordinator. If we do change the head coach, a new head coach comes in, he's going to want to bring his own, you know, offensive coordinator. At this time, at this stage of Eli Manning's career, I just don't feel like, you know, I really don't want to just, you know, change his new offensive, you know, scheme now. You know, at this stage of his career, I think he's starting to get, you know, comfortable with this new offense with Ben McAdoo. So that's one of the reasons why I would want, you know, Tom Coughlin to say, if any changes that I would want to see is within the defensive coordinator. I think it's time, you know, within the 5 years that Perry Fields was with us, I mean, he did an okay job, but it's not a job that every Giants fans wants to see. They want to see, you know, a better defensive scheme. They want to see a hard-nosed defense and everything like that. So, if any changes that I want to see this upcoming season, this offseason, I really just want to change the defensive coordinator. I just want to give Tom Coughlin another chance and see what he's got, you know, because I think he still has it. I think, you know, the personnel that we had on the field really, you know, he had to do what he had on the field, and he didn't have that much on the field with guys going down and injuries. And I know I was arguing with you, you know, to start the season, Paul, you know, with the offensive line. Yes, I did. I wanted the first-round draft pick as a weapon, and I'm glad we got it.
Okay.
But I'm going to go back with your philosophy. You know, this upcoming draft in the first round, I think we should go after an offensive tackle within the first
old school,
round.
Right? Old school. Right. Thanks for the call, my friend.
Thank you, Roman.
Appreciate it. Roman, I want to ask you just one question, philosophically speaking. Eli Manning, who had been in the Kevin Gilbride system for all of those years, throwing the ball downfield, you know, holding it, looking for people. Then he goes West Coast offense with the McAdoo scheme now this year. How difficult do you suspect it would be now that Eli has made the adjustment? Clearly, he's adapted and he's been rather efficient in the new offense for him to have to switch up different offenses should the Giants decide to do that. Is that something that needs to be a detriment or needs to be thought about in terms of how do you affect Eli if you change systems again?
Well, I think it goes back to, you have to look at the fact that if any of those issues are reality in January, one of the main focuses, I think, of the administration would be what's the best way to keep the franchise quarterback playing at a consistent level so that there isn't a lot of change. I mean, you don't want to – I mean, look at these quarterbacks like Jason Campbell, you know, Alex Smith.
Oh, boy.
You know, 5-6 coordinators in
7 years.
Well,
they're also not as talented as Eli.
No, they're not. But circumstantially, you don't want that much change from doing one thing for 10 years, something your 11th year, something else. So either if that were the case, I think something would have to stay the same. Something, whether it's McAdoo or something, would have to stay the same as a contingent if there were to be any changes.
John Mara was quoted as saying in Newsday, I believe, within the last 24 or 48 hours, that they still believe that Eli has several really good seasons left in him.
Yeah.
So Eli is still part of the foundation of this team, and I do think that he's got to be considered with whatever you decide to do.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to my second point was going to be you've got to surround him with talent. I mean, you've got to surround Eli Manning with – you've got to have an offensive line that's playing better. You've got to have a solid running game. You know, Rashad Jennings has been out the last four – I mean, what a difference – what kind of difference would – Rashad Innings have made had he never deviated from his play in that Houston Texans game.
He was top five in the NFL in rushing at the time he got hurt.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never know. So, you know, having a defense that's getting sacks, turnovers, you know, getting him the football, you know, short fields and for offense. I mean, every quarterback wants that. Aaron Rodgers wants it. Peyton Manning wants it. Tom Brady wants that. So, I mean, when you have a franchise quarterback, which Eli Manning certainly is, you've got to make sure that the systems are in place, and I'm pretty sure that this Giants administration will make sure scouting, coaching, everyone will make sure that Eli Manning has the best situation possible. I know one thing I'm excited about is if you know, speaking of next year, is Odell Beckham and Victor Cruz with maybe an improved Larry Donnell and a healthy Rashad Jennings. I mean, and a better Andre Williams. I mean, that alone right there should be on the perimeter, but it starts up front.
Yeah, and thank goodness for Eli Manning. He's been healthy.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, remember how many questions we heard about his ankle last year at the end of the season?
Oh, yeah.
He had the minor surgery in the offseason, and then it was like, okay, is he going to be in OTAs? Is he going to be ready for training camp? What's the situation going to be? And Eli's like, no, I'm doing great. I'm doing fine. I'm ahead of schedule. I'm throwing passes. I'm doing this. Well, I'll tell you what, that ankle thing, that issue went out the window pretty quick for me.
What ankle?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I still think he's got two, Roman.
Yeah.
Last time I checked. I'm Paul Dottino. That's Roman Oben. Don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is here Monday to Friday, every weekday from noon until 1 Eastern time. Write down the number, 201-939-4513, or go to hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. He's r_Oben.
Underscore Oben.
Underscore Oben.
Oben, yeah.
Underscore. I don't know what that symbol is. It's
underscore.
A line.
It's the line.
The line at the bottom, the underline. And I'm Giants at WFAN. Folks, that'll do it for today's program. We'll see you next time.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got it on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.